Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
You're listening to the Companion Gundog Podcast. I'm your host, Grayson Geyer, and with me today is a very, very special guest. Emily Shirey is here. It's been a long time. How are you, Emily?
I'm good, Grayson. I've been busy. How are you?
I know you have. I know all about it. I think we all have. It's been a very busy yet prosperous year, in to some degree. I mean, as far as dog training can ever be prosperous, but it's good. Things are cruising right along, and you know, we had the gift of COVID, and ever since then, it seems to have not slowed down a touch. So I'm grateful for that, and still, just as always, trying to figure out how I'm going to parlay that into into making a living doing this job. I've been trying to make a living doing for my whole life. So, but yeah, any news to share, I guess, in regards to your business, things you've been doing? I know you've been picking up some titles along the way, and
not too much. Things are still cruising along as normal. I've got bird dogs in for my second class of the season, and I've had some really nice bird dogs so far. I don't think I have any more obedience dogs scheduled until the spring, so we're in full bird dog mode.
It's a good feeling.
And no upcoming hunt tests or anything kind of in our off season.
Yeah, kind of out of that hunt test season. That's out of my head right now, and I'm grateful for that, you know, not thinking of any ambitions in terms of that stuff. And usually this is my field trial season, and this year I just kind of have backed it way down. We're going to do the St. Hubert trial, which I guess I do need to give you guys an update on. So if you registered for the St. Hubert trial and you got your email from Three Rivers Land Trust that said they were bowing out and you were going to get refunded, and you got your refund. Yeah, hopefully all of you have checked your accounts and got your refund. The Bird Dog Society website registration is live. It has been for a couple of weeks now, so please go back and re-register. We still want you there. We're going to be at Cooper Black February 3rd and 4th. And again, that registration is up and live. And we hadn't had everybody that was registered re-register. That was definitely a hitch in the old giddy up, but we got a lot of fun stuff planned, and we're driving on with it. So, if anybody's got any questions, you know, look up the Bird Dog Society. The registration will be available through their homepage, and ask any questions there. It's all pretty self-explanatory. And again, you know, we're there for conservation, fellowship, sportsmanship, and all those good things. So, and a big party. So please, again, give that a look, come see us. We're going to have a big time. Let's see what else is on the agenda. I actually have duck hunted a lot more this season than I have in the past. A lot of that has to do, I think, with me slowing down on my field trialing and hunt testing and worrying about that. And when I say a lot more, I mean like three or four times in the second split.
Which is a lot more for you.
Yeah. And I mean, sneaking away when I get the opportunity from the kennel. A couple of early just wood duck shoots on the farm went really well. First day opening split, I went out on some public. I really worked hard to like find one little hole out in the middle of nowhere and sneak in on it. And it was as bountiful as I was hoping. There were wood ducks everywhere, and that was really cool. And then one trip off to a client's place that's full of awesome duck hunting, and had a great teal shoot there. So fun season. Looking forward to that. Opens back up in North Carolina December 19th. And then we're just short of 2 weeks away from the woodcock opener. And that is going to be wild for me this year. So, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully I'll be...
Saw your schedule.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll be as excited about it at the end of the season as I am going into it. But, you know, it'll be fun. And I'm excited to share that passion with folks, you know, that are learning that game as well. So, but... You know, I've rattled on long enough, and I guess I do need to make, I do have one obligatory plug I must make. I've got, as you guys know, a sponsor now, and that's Ugly Dog Hunting. And it's really interesting that I did pick up a sponsor kind of leading up to the episode we're about to have, because I've always been so deeply against it. But I firmly stand with Mike and Mike Nadusky at Ugly Dog Hunting. And you guys have, you know, if you hadn't heard the episode I did with Mike, listen to it and you'll know why he's my sponsor and why I'm with him and why I'm going to continue to support him and look forward to watching all the great things he does with that business moving forward. But please, if you have any retail needs in your gear requirements for working your dogs, let Ugly Dog Hunting be your first stop. That's uglydoghunting.com. And beyond that, guys, we're here to talk about the biggest hiccup of the season in terms of my kennel. And that has been the Victor recall debacle. For those that don't know, I guess November's been a really tough month for Victor. I've been feeding it for a few years now. I think about the time Emily came on board, I was really looking for a good kibble and started looking to her to kind of give me some suggestions. And that's what we came up with. So I've been feeding it for what, 4 years now, three, yep. four. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And it's been the best, you know, it's been a wonderful advantage to me as the proprietor of a gun dog kennel that requires a lot of maintenance and cleaning, keeping the dogs sanitary and healthy and fit during their time here. And I have zero affiliation professionally or personally with Victor, but I've always kind of pushed him here because I believe in the product. It's been from a consistency standpoint, I've been feeding Victor High Pro Plus, which is their 30-20 kind of performance blend, and it's a beef base. And from a cleanup perspective, like that would be priority number two for me, right? The health and well-being of the dogs in the kennel always has to come first. But I can unequivocally say that the hours I save cleaning up Victor High Pro Plus turds makes it absolutely worth feeding that food. So if you know, consistently the dogs come in, and I rarely have I had a dog that doesn't transition easily and then have a kind of good GI kind of dealings with the Victor. So I am really bummed that they're not on the shelf, because it has not been so great cleaning up and feeding the dogs, especially in the winter here when we have these cold nights and you're trying to keep weight on them. Some dogs have a tendency to start losing weight during this time of year, and so you kind of have to up the amount of food you're giving them, and that always turns into a mess when you're not dealing with a food that you know, that they handle as well as the Victor. So, I'll get into that a little bit more. And I really, at this point, it's a good time to turn it over to Emily just to talk general dog food stuff and maybe any of her experiences with the Victor, because I know she's been feeding that as well for the kibble.
Okay. So today I am going to talk about kibble. So to start off with, disclaimer, I'm not a vet or a nutritionist. I am just someone who is pretty passionate about dog food. I started that in college. I was an animal science major and found my nutrition courses to be particularly interesting. My whole goal in life is to give my dogs the healthiest, happiest life I can. And part of that for me is making sure that they have the best quality nutrition I can provide them. So again, I am not a vet or a nutritionist, which means I have really nothing to gain from this. I have no skin in this game, so I have no product or service to sell. So you can take this as my unbiased information of essentially what I think is best for my dogs. I do all this research specifically for me to provide the best for my dogs. And so all I'm doing in this podcast is sharing the information that I know in order to help people who may have similar interests. So I know there are going to be a lot of bird dog people who will comment on this and say, my grandpa has been feeding Proplan for 10,000 years and all the dogs have lived long, happy, healthy lives. And that is great. And if that's what you want to feed because that's what your grandpa fed, you know, everyone's entitled to make their own decisions. But I personally want to go beyond that and understand why I'm feeding things, how I can get the most out of it. And therefore, I'm doing a lot of my own research and coming to a lot of my own conclusions. And so I would like to think of this podcast as kind of a jumpstart or an outline for people who want to do the same, for people who want to do their own research and go beyond, well, my vet said to feed this, or my neighbor said to feed this, or my grandpa said to feed this.
Yeah, whatever grandpa says sticks normally. Yeah. And before you get rolling on it, I got to make a little bit of an observation regarding, like, I've never seen anything blow up on my social the way my little post about Victor did. Like, something about dog food,
it gets people riled up.
It is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's wild. So, all right, get after it. Tell us what you
got. Okay. So, to begin with, I do not think that kibble is the ideal diet. I feed two of my dogs raw and one of my dogs half raw, half kibble. I understand that kibble is necessary for the majority of people, and especially when we're talking about my clients, Grayson's clients, people listening to this podcast, kibble is the practical, realistic option. But I need to preface this by saying I am going to talk a lot of crap about kibble, and that is because it has very few redeeming qualities, in my opinion, and most of those being convenience and affordability. And if that's what works for you, that's what works for you. I feed kibble, Grayson feeds kibble. It's just a part of life. But I think it needs to be understood that when we're fighting about kibble, we're fighting about, you know, what's the best of the worst. So if anyone's interested in talking about raw diets or adding fresh food to kibble, since that is definitely a lot more practical than feeding 100% raw, maybe we can do a follow-up episode. Let us know about that. If you want to learn why feeding whole foods is important beyond common sense, you know, that's what it boils down to. We never go to the doctor and they say, oh, you should eat less fresh food. You should definitely eat more processed foods. There wouldn't be a doctor on this planet that would tell humans that. And yet that's what the majority of vets tell us, is that don't feed fresh foods, feed processed foods. There's a great book called Feeding Dogs, The Science Behind Dry Versus Raw Debate by Dr. Connor Brady. I really enjoy this book. It is very science heavy. It's not practical in the sense it's not going to tell you what to feed, but it's going to tell you why feeding dogs whole foods is important. Just a couple notes on that. There's some debate on whether dogs are carnivores or omnivores. Dogs are carnivores based on dentition. So if we look at their teeth, they are carnivores. They are not obligate carnivores like cats, so they can survive on more carbohydrates than cats can. But just because they can digest starch doesn't mean they should. Dogs have no requirement for starch. They can get all of their energy from fat and protein. And that's different than omnivores. So essentially, all dogs being fed kibble diets are in carb overload, because a natural diet is going to be a natural diet, meaning not only what wolves ate, you know, dogs are obviously highly evolved since wolves, but what wild dingoes eat. He talks a lot about that in the Feeding Dogs book. Dingoes are more closely related to dogs than wolves. Dogs will choose to be carnivores when given the option, but when they have easy access to starches, like scavenging, they will eat starches. But all dogs being fed kibble diets are in carb overload. We started feeding kibble because it is cheap, convenient, it's an easily balanced food, and because of marketing. So it started in 1860, was when the first real biscuit came out by James Spratt, who saw a business opportunity out of it. So he was using things that weren't necessarily great for human consumption and throwing them into a biscuit and marketing it. as something specifically for dogs. And that's where the idea of kibble came from, not out of need, but out of a business opportunity. Disadvantages of feeding kibble are, we're going to talk about the fillers, the quality that goes into it, synthetic ingredients, and the long-term health issues. So those are some things we're going to cover. When I look for a kibble, one of the first things I look for are the ingredients. What you need to know is that the order of ingredients is based on the weight of the ingredient in the food. So the first ingredient is always going to be essentially the most, and the last ingredient is going to be the least.
And real quick to interject, I've seen some posts on this, and I can't remember what the answer was. Is this the dry weight prior to cooking or the weight after it's been processed?
So order of ingredients is on an as-fed basis, meaning it includes moisture content. Dry matter basis means on a dry matter basis, gotcha. There's no moisture. Gotcha. So this is really important. So when we look at the ingredient type, the type of ingredient is important. So if you see chicken as the first ingredient, that's fantastic, except for you have to keep in mind the moisture content. So on a dry matter basis, if chicken is the first ingredient, when we take the moisture content out of that, obviously meat is very high moisture content. Yeah. This is deceiving, and this is how a lot of kibble companies trick you into thinking what is the first ingredient. So if chicken's the first ingredient, and then the second ingredient is something that doesn't have a lot of moisture content. So let's say
cornmeal. Yeah.
A meal was obviously very dry. Sure. So on a dry matter basis, you take the moisture out of that chicken, and then suddenly chicken's no longer the first ingredient. So the order of ingredients is important, but you have to be savvy about the way you look at it. There's also some other tricks companies do where they break down ingredients. So you'll see corn and then you'll see cornmeal. And essentially those are the same things, but because they're broken up, that means they can be placed separately in that order. Whereas if we were just to say corn as a whole, that would probably be the first ingredient. But when we break it up between corn and cornmeal, then we can have them chicken be the first ingredient.
Let me ask you. So I see the meal come mm-hmm. up a lot. So mm-hmm. whether we're talking the protein or whether we're talking the starch in the mm-hmm. food, you'll see chicken meal, whatever, and then the corn and cornmeal. I think I've got a good idea of what cornmeal is. Do you know what like the protein meals are? And essentially what is cornmeal? I'm assuming it's the ground corn.
Yeah. So think. It's obviously it's been processed in order to be a dry meal that you're going to buy that the company is going to buy in a processed bag. And there are a lot of opinions out there about whether or not they're a legitimate source of protein.
Sure.
So pros to chicken meal versus chicken is that there's no moisture content. So when you see chicken meal high on the ingredient list, you can be confident that there is probably a good amount of actual chicken protein in it. The downsides of it are that it's processed. And obviously, anytime we're processing something, so we've got this processed chicken meal that we're putting into processed kibble, anytime you heat something and process it, you are losing nutrients. So we're kind of jumping ahead here, but we're going to talk about bioavailability. And anytime you process something, you're going to lower the bioavailability. So for me, meal is personally not a red flag. Again, I already know that kibble, we're picking the best of the worst. When I see a bunch of different meals, animal-based protein meals in a food, I would much rather see that than corn and rice and grains, because at least I know there are animal-based proteins going into that food.
Sure.
But, you know, to each their own on how they feel about meals.
Yeah, no.
So when we look at ingredients, we're obviously wanting animal-based ingredients. This is really important. Just because dogs can digest starch doesn't mean they should. So when we look at ingredients, we want to see the most amount of animal-based proteins that we can. For me personally, I like to see beef, pork, fish over chicken. because when we talk about quality ingredients, which is important, just because it says, you know, they're meat-based proteins doesn't mean that they're also quality-based proteins. We've got a lot of that in dog food where we have byproducts, which isn't necessary. It's not something to be super alarmed by, but byproducts are all the things that humans aren't going to eat. And sometimes that can be good, you know, depending on the source, but sometimes that's also a bunch of scraps left over that don't have a lot of nutrient value. And that's really hard for me personally to deduce from looking at these labels. Is this a quality of a quality based meat protein, or is this some very low nutrient based meat protein? So go ahead.
Is it just that you think chicken, maybe a chicken byproduct would have more low nutrient density?
Absolutely. Well, yes. And so when we look at meats, obviously, even from a human perspective, we know that red meats are more nutrient dense. The other issue with the chicken is the omegas. It's very high in omega 6, which is pro-inflammatory.
Gotcha.
Everything in kibble is pretty much pro-inflammation because of the high starch content. So when we compare chicken versus beef, we've got those high omegas in a chicken that makes it even more pro-inflammatory than beef. And you know, chickens are, and this can go for cows and pigs too, but chickens are almost always fed corn diets that are pro-inflammation. So for me, I tend to avoid chicken as much as I can. Like, I don't even feed my raw dogs chicken meat. They eat chicken wings and maybe some chicken feet, but I eat a ton of chicken breast myself. I will not feed it to my dogs.
Interesting. Well, and I remember that from our early conversations when I was trying to like filter through kibbles I wanted to feed, and I was leaning on you for the advice that, hey, you like the beef protein being number one in the
in
the Victor High Pro Plus. And I've always just kind of, without doing my own research, which I don't like to do. You know, I'm the convenience guy. I mean, I feed a handful of dogs around here, and even with my own dogs, you remember I took one quick shot at feeding raw.
Like, that lasted like for 3/4 of a day.
Yeah. I was like, nah, here, you take the rest of this stuff that I bought, and went back to feeding kibble. But the consistency, I've always kind of just chalked it up to the fact that it was a beef protein that all the, like, and I say all, but the great, great majority of the dogs tended to just do very consistently well. I mean, it wasn't like you walk through the kennel and go, okay, this guy's got, I can go through the kennel right now and I'm feeding, I'm going to say it, Diamond Naturals beef and rice. I stuck with it because it was the beef protein, but I can walk through the kennel and I don't know if it's the filler. I don't know what the ingredient is that does this. And I can go, okay, this dog is going to have a decently well-formed turd. I don't have a single dog that has the well-formed turd that the Victor throws. But I can walk through and go, and I know now, like, okay, that dog's going to be this consistency of their poop based on what my cleaning looks like every day. Whereas the Victor, it was just like consistently the exact same deal, you know, on the back end. And I always just chalked it up to beef. And I guess I was proven wrong on that regard, just going with the Diamond on this one. But, you know, it's not the same for whatever reason. I don't know exactly what the ingredient was, but that, now I've kind of debunked my own theory in that regard. It's not just
interesting. You know, a lot of people assume that their dogs have chicken allergies. That's something you hear a lot. A lot of people who's, at least in the raw community, it's been mentioned a lot that dogs who are supposedly allergic to chicken and kibble can eat chicken raw.
Yeah.
And obviously, when we add processing to kibble, we're making it even more pro-inflammatory. But when we think about allergy symptoms, redness, itching, discomfort, GI upset, a lot of that can be caused by allergies, can be caused by inflammation, which, you know, they're kind of one and the same.
That's
so when when we think of chicken and dogs being allergic to it, it's because it's so pro-inflammatory. And it is definitely not the quality. Like, I feed my dogs a ton of fat. Everyone knows how hard Blitz is to keep weight on. I would never feed chicken fat. I would go and buy beef or pork fat, but chicken fat is just not the same quality, and it's what's in all of these kibbles.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's storing whatever the inflammatory, especially when you talk about the omega-6s and stuff. That's where you're going to find the great majority. Yep. And I know this is going to aggravate the heck out of you right now, but I want to take this thing on a quick turn because you did say something. You said, you know, that it's common to feed dogs raw chicken in the raw diet community, I guess.
Bones. Chicken Not bones. A lot of people feed raw muscle meat chicken, okay. but definitely a lot of bones because they're easily digestible.
But if you're feeding an easily digestible chicken bone, I'm assuming that's coming from a raw chicken. Mm-hmm. And the big fear in raw chicken, at least amongst humans, has always been this salmonella bacterium. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
So this, I want to bring this up and I want, you know, I want to insert it into the conversation. I don't want
to
just
great time to do that.
Bookend it. But that's what the recall for Victor was about, mm-hmm. right? So they had, they detected salmonella in the facility or in the food or something like that. And I guess from what I understand, and I've been trying to piece this together and I don't have a good source for just a good linear story about this thing, mm-hmm. but that there were a couple of kids, infants, toddlers that were getting sick and they kind of traced it back to the Victor. And at first it was like just the 5-pound bags of mm-hmm. High Pro Plus that they were concerned mm-hmm. about turned into a general recall. And now I can't even remember the name of the conglomerate that owns Victor now. But Midwest, is it Midwest or something like
Superior
that?
Superior Food.
I don't know. It's one of the big business companies mm-hmm. that bought it from the little guys that started it. And that's, you know, there's a lot of hemming and hawing about that as well, mm-hmm. that now this big company owns it, Quality Controls and the crapper. You know, for me personally, it's just about the ingredients. Like, you know, and you want quality control to be high, but if you're running a big, I mean, I can't think of any major feed company that is safe from a recall.
Well, okay, here's going to be my thought. If we're going to talk about this recall now, here's my thoughts on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
For one, it's a voluntary recall, which is a big deal to me.
Yes.
They did not wait until shit hit the fan and the FDA said, hey, you have to pull this from shelves. It was a voluntary recall. They say, we messed up. We don't want anyone else to get sick.
Sure.
That's important to me from an ethical standpoint.
Yes.
For two, they found traces of salmonella within the plant.
Yeah.
And that's why everything got recalled. And I know people are freaking out because it's not just one or two things. To me, again, morally, that's the safe thing to do. Sure. We don't know what products are affected. Why doesn't everyone just bring everything back and we'll just start fresh?
Yeah.
Again, I think that's very ethical of them. For three, and maybe this is just me being a little bit sassy about particular products, but when you are a prescription diet company who has an FDA recall for vitamin D toxicity that is killing dogs, that is a big deal to me.
Okay.
And I heard very little about that.
Yes.
These companies, this particular company that had this vitamin D recall that was killing dogs, also feeds these prescription diets that almost never have meat protein in them. You'll see they have a bunch of cornstarch and grains. Okay, science diet.
Okay, science diet. Here we are.
When Science Diet and Royal Canin are composing food of almost 100% starch, you don't find salmonella in plants like that.
And so when people allude to prescription diet, is that what we're talking about? Is that kind of, because I see that a lot. I always see prescription diet and I'm like, what does that even mean?
This is a great question. Okay, let's talk about prescription diets. Prescription diets are diets that have had feed trials performed on them.
Okay.
And this is why vets recommend them, because vets can point to science. But gotcha. Who is paying for those feeding trials?
Sure.
The company who produces them.
Well, yeah, this rings of like the entire pharma industry.
Exactly.
With humans, right?
Exactly. So. This is why we need to be asking more questions and doing our research and not just going with what everyone else says.
Sure.
So feeding trials are performed on kibble. If you do any research what constitutes a feeding trial. It literally is something crazy. And, you know, there's different regulations and stuff, but it's like if you can keep a dog alive for 90 days on this, it passes the feeding trial.
And so now it's science backed.
And now it's science backed. And so now vets can recommend this
as a kickback.
And get a kickback sure. in a lot of cases. Vets can recommend this as science backed food because it kept dogs alive for 90 days.
Gotcha. Yeah.
There are not feeding trials that go over the course of a dog's life, which is understandable. That would be so hard to maintain and to fund.
Sure.
But you will never see vets recommend a prescription diet for raw because there's no raw company to pay for that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming there's no, and I don't know this. I mean, I know there's a, what is it, AFCO or something like that, you know, puts the ominous dominus on our food that says it's okay to eat. But I'm assuming they probably don't have the same standards as the FDA does for like human foods and things like
that. So AFCO regulates the nutrients, meaning there is this, the National Research Council, NRC, sets them minimum requirements and sometimes maximums too, but not always, requirements of nutrients in foods based on kibble.
Yeah.
So it's saying, you know, in order to keep this dog alive, it has to have, and this, I'm just making stuff up here.
Sure.
You know, milligrams per 1,000 kilograms of copper every day. So that's what AFCO does. And AFCO says this food meets those requirements.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me swing it back around to the salmonella thing, because I do have a client that just came to get a dog today, and I was really excited to talk to him because he's a vet, and we talked, you know, had an in-depth talk about this particular thing we're dealing with right here in the podcast. But what I was really interested in hearing was his thoughts on salmonella. Like, what do you do if you get salmonella? What, how do you treat that? And he goes, you treat for symptoms. He's like, you know, it's, and now again, I'm not a vet. And this is completely secondhand information, but it makes sense to me based on my limited experience in allopathic medicine and just in the military and stuff like that. Like, you treat for symptoms, you make sure you stay hydrated. Usually the body's going to clear it pretty quickly. Rarely are you even going to an antibiotic. Now, that's not, I don't want to diminish, and I certainly don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, because I had that Facebook post, and I actually had a lady, maybe two, I couldn't tell if it was the same person or different, that had an experience where their dog died. I have no idea what the particulars were around that. And is it possible? It's absolutely possible. Dogs die from bacterial infections all the time, whether it be salmonella, whether it be whatever. Is it, you know, is salmonella a major concern? Is it something that we should be afraid of? You know, I think obviously none of us want to get it.
Right.
I've had E. coli, and it was horrible. And it was the worst experience. I mean, terrible experience.
But it was the only time Grayson's lost weight.
Thanks for acknowledging that. So I don't want to diminish the value of that. And I don't want to diminish those people's experiences. I feel for them. What I want is like, what's the real fear? Should we be afraid? And if we're feeding, you know, if it's common to feed a dog raw chicken, which is like a biggest no-no ever for a human being to ingest because of the S word, and dogs are clearing it and passing it and doing fine, I'm assuming they're being exposed to salmonella on a pretty regular basis.
Absolutely.
On occasion. And I think I probably am too, by the way. I handle birds and eggs and
Oh my gosh, we have to.
I'm probably swimming in salmonella on a regular basis. And I mean, I wash my hands and stuff. But
on
I'm not going through a, you know, like a hazmat decon between, you know, my day at work and my time at the supper table. And to this point, I don't think I've ever suffered from a salmonella exposure in any way. So, you know, I I'm not telling you it's not worth being afraid of. I'm very suspect of like any fear mongering that goes on around.
100% agree.
You know, and so that was kind of my question to him, and that kind of validated what my own thoughts were. And again, you know, I'm not referencing any peer-reviewed research, and we are mentioning companies by name here, but we're not libeling anyone. We're just telling it like it is, you know.
Exactly.
And I'm happy to, and I think that's important, you know, that there be access to at least somebody that's trying to understand what's going on right now. And that's all we're doing here. So
yep.
I'll get out of the way now, and we can circle back, but just kind of, again, we're dealing in kibble. We know it's the best of, we're looking for the best of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I will always be feeding the best I can of the worst I can at the best value I can,
yes.
Right? Because it is a matter, not just of convenience. If I were to try and feed raw to the number of dogs I feed
it's
completely
realistic.
Unsustainable,
yep.
But I'm not even going to do it with any of my favorite old dogs. They're just going to.
And no judgment. I'm not judging anyone for the choices they make, and I understand, believe me.
Yeah.
When I raw prep, I envy anyone who feeds kibble. So absolutely no judgment.
And I do think it's cool. Yeah, I do. I enjoy like watching your post and seeing the things you feed your dog. And I to some degree go like, you know, always have a transient thought like, oh, that'd be fun. No,
it's not. So it is not fun. Okay. So we're still discussing ingredients. If there's anything you take away from this podcast, I hope it's to understand carbohydrates and kibble and why they're so important and how they affect our dogs. This to me is, you know, the thing you star. So carbohydrates are either simple carbs, which are sugars, or complex carbs, which are starches. So I use these terms interchangeably some. That is not always correct of me, but it's just how things work in my brain. But carbohydrates are sugars and starches. So all starches get broken down into sugars. So that's really important that we understand we can think of carbohydrates as sugars. Unlike protein and fat, dogs have no nutritional requirement for dietary carbohydrates. So why are there carbs in kibble? For one, because they're cheap. When we talk about adding ingredients such as corn, which is one of the most affordable carbohydrates compared to beef, obviously corn is going to be cheaper. For two, kibble has to have a binding agent. So you cannot make kibble out of corn and vegetables. It would never, out of meat and fruits and vegetables. It would never work. You have to have something really sticky to hold it together to give it that nice little round or disc or whatever shape it is in. You have to have starches in order to hold kibble like together like that.
Like it's just like a little hush puppy.
Exactly. Yes, kibble is a hush puppy. So that's another reason. And for two, for three, it's very affordable for companies to add carbohydrates to bump up calorie content and sometimes even protein content. So when we look at the starch content of meat, it's zero. Fruits, 6-8%, vegetables, 4%. Grains have the highest percent carbohydrates. And so when we're looking at ingredients, we're looking for grains. We're looking for ingredients that are going to have the lowest starch content in order to keep the carbohydrate level down. So an ideal dog diet would be, as far as what they would eat in the wild, is somewhere between, I think, 8-10% carbohydrates, whereas dog foods are generally 30-60% carbohydrates. All those excess carbs, which are sugars, and we know what sugar does, it causes inflammation and it leads to a variety of health problems. Inflammation leads to obesity, diabetes, cancer, elevated blood sugar, inflammation, allergies, maldigestion, which is gas, bloating, diarrhea, imbalanced gut bacteria, immune system imbalances, and cancer. So the excessive carbohydrates to me are the number one problem with kibble. In order to calculate the carb content of kibble, you can take, and this will be in the notes, you do 100 minus whatever the protein, fat, fiber, moisture, and ash content is. And that's how you get the carbohydrate content. Some companies will add that percentage on their website. You can calculate it if they don't. If they don't use an ash content on their website, you can use 6% as a general number.
But ash is just a byproduct of the cooking process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So protein, fiber, fat, moisture, ash, you add that together and you subtract that from 100, and that leaves you with the carbohydrate content.
Okay. Protein, fiber,
fat,
moisture,
ash.
Okay. Five things. Got mm-hmm. it. Okay.
And when I look for kibble, that is one of the number one things I look for, is the lowest carbohydrate content I can, because for one, that means the least amount of inflammation I can get. And for two, it means more quality products, hopefully, like protein and fat.
Yeah.
Something we really need to discuss that I don't think I've ever seen really talked about in the context of kibble is glycemic index.
Yeah.
So the glycemic index is how food affects our blood sugar. Meaning when we eat something, what happens to our blood sugar after we eat it? The higher the number, the higher it affects our blood sugar.
The harder our body has to work to process that with yep. insulin and all those things.
Yep. Gotcha. So this is really important in the context of heart health, especially diabetes, cancer, and our energy and mood. These are the things that are affected when our blood sugar spikes. And over time, if we have a lot of these blood sugar spikes, that's what can lead to like heart health and diabetes and affect our energy and mood. Any meat is going to have a glycemic index of 0. But when we look at these grains, the lower the number, the better. So again, chicken, beef, pork are all going to have a glycemic index of 0. But if we process those, they can then have a glycemic index. So the glycemic index of corn is 52, but then corn gluten meal is 68. Rice is 66, grain sorghum is 70, and whole grain millet is 52. The higher the number, the more it affects our blood sugar. And over time, with these constant blood sugar spikes, it's going to lead to disease.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's crazy that we don't talk about that, especially it affecting energy and mood, but then also, you know, the diseases that it can cause. In humans, this is a big deal. We are always told to reduce our sugar for this reason.
Well, and it's like, I mean, I feel like I'm listening to, well, number one, like this could be an episode of like you'd be listening to on Joe Rogan or something, because they're always talking like this human optimization stuff. I like carbs too much for this, but you Same. Know, people are like, there are people thriving on carnivore diets right now.
Absolutely.
I'm sure some people have a genetic propensity to do better than others on mm-hmm. that kind of stuff or whatever. But I was also having a conversation with a good friend and client not long ago who is into like the superhuman health optimization thing. And the guy actually, he's in his early 50s. He's fit as a fiddle. He's like pescatarian to some degree. He does eat his vegetables, but he like eats everything in a certain order.
Interesting.
So that it doesn't affect his glycemic or his blood sugar the same way.
Awesome.
And he wears a glucose monitor. He's not a type 2 diabetic, but he actually like, it's a game for him. Yes. He's like trying to keep his blood sugar below a certain level all the time, even after meals and stuff.
I have a dog friend that's doing that. It's and amazing. I listened to her talk about this at a hunt test recently, and she is not diabetic, but has been wearing one for health reasons. And she said it's wild to see how things affect her blood sugar. Yeah.
And he just said, it's like, it's amazing. You're playing this game and the health benefits are amazing. And you can just tell immediately, like within a week, you know, how much better he felt. And then now he's like, you know, putting on muscle, losing fat. It's all, you know, and it's so much of it's just diet and our insulin reactions to these carbohydrates are a huge, like a primary factor in all of this.
Exactly.
You know, and I guess it goes the same for the dogs.
Exactly. And this is, I just feel like it's such a big deal. And you know, the majority, almost all dogs are weaned onto kibble. And so, you know, people might think, oh, my dog has high energy and, you know, a great mood and stuff. But would we know if it was different without that?
Sure.
Right? Because we have nothing to compare it to, because all they've ever had is these huge insulin spikes.
Sure.
And so, you know, when people have fed a dog kibble for their whole life and then suddenly switch to raw, they rave about it and they, you know, talk about all the benefits they see and stuff. And it's just like, we wouldn't ever know how to compare if all of our dog has ever eaten his kibble, but it absolutely affects your mood and energy and all those things. You know, you can do a little experiment yourself, which I have unintentionally been doing this last week by eating all of the bread that I can possibly eat and feeling how terrible I feel. I cannot breathe through my nose and I am not sick, but I am just so inflamed from all of the bread that I've been eating. But I know like it's the processed food that I'm eating. And sure. I know that when I decide to get my life together and eat better, that it'll go away. But, you know, are these things happening to our dogs? I mean, they have to be, and we're not.
Yeah, but they're living the American diet the same as, I mean, I am. I'm, you know, I don't know if you had this as a kid, but in elementary school, I can remember, I mean, through high school, I can remember the food pyramid being pushed on us all the time, you know, and like you were supposed to, the most important part of your diet were the carbohydrates, and that was what you were supposed to consume the most of. And now we're luckily having this pendulum swing, you know, and people are really becoming savvy to that. And obviously, like, you know, the lower carb diets and things. And I mean, we're also opportunistic omnivores to some degree,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, but I think, you know, I mean, I could go on and on about this just based on my own education and experience. And one thing I will bring up, though, that I always thought was fascinating is, the Mississippian culture. I was an anthropology major for a while in college, and the life expectancy of humans in along the Mississippi alluvial plain dropped dramatically when they went from being hunter-gatherers to an agrarian culture where they were growing corn. And so they were consuming primarily corn, and they all started losing their teeth and dying early as a result. And so, you know, I think our bodies were designed and evolved to, and our dogs' bodies, you know, the dogs for sure, primary carnivores, opportunistic omnivores, we're supposed to kind of roam the landscape eating what's available to us. And if we have sharp teeth, we're built to eat meat, yep. You know? And so, again, a nice, fun little veer off of the course there, but bring us back around.
Okay. So just for comparison, Blitz has a NRC balanced raw diet. And on an as-fed basis, which is what the label is going to be for the guarantee analysis for kibble, she ate 16% protein, 12% fat, 4% carbs, 66% moisture. Because she's eating raw, the moisture content is huge.
And how many percent carbs?
4.
Okay.
On a dry matter basis, she's eating 11% carbs.
Okay.
So kibble is, the guarantee analysis for kibble is on an as-fed basis, and it's 30 to 60% carbs compared to her 4.
Sure. And for the very, very few of you that don't know, Blitz is Emily's short hair and her kind of, you know, her first seat pet bird dog. And for anybody that's ever seen a picture of Blitz, I mean, she's a super athlete, right? Like just, yep. I mean, muscle, super muscle tone everywhere, looks great, carries a ton of muscle, very little fat, and looks very good all
and
the
she's
time.
She's been eating raw since she was 8 weeks old, and she is 6 and a half now. But she's, you know, the first dog I've had that has eaten raw, and so far so good.
Yeah.
Okay. This one's for you, Grayson. Do dogs need grains? This can be very controversial, and everyone is free to have their own opinion on this.
I do not think they need grains. I would assume that very few wolves are consuming grains on a regular basis. And I do think that they're the same species as our dogs.
Yes.
Just a slight variation.
So there, you know, everyone has heard about grains and heart disease, DCM. And the research on that is very inconclusive. And unfortunately, the companies that were behind the original research that said there is a link to DCM and grains were also the companies that are filling their kibble with grains. So it's very convenient for them to say, hey, your dog should eat grain, as a way for them to throw corn into everything and have people be like, oh, good, this is, you know, good for my dog. The real issue boils down to legumes and amino acids. So bioavailability is really important, and this is such a hard conversation to have, because I feel like it's very bioavailability is the way we digest food and how much we absorb of it.
Gotcha.
So eggs are supposed to be like the most bioavailable food. Obviously, they are meant to feed the chicken. Milk is supposed to be extremely bioavailable, or is extremely bioavailable too, because it's supposed to feed animals.
And when you say that, when you break the nutrients down, I assume we're talking like fats and proteins primarily, but I'm sure there's other minerals and vitamins,
yeah,
and things like that.
I'm not 100% certain, and I don't want to be quoted on that.
Gotcha.
But it's the way we, bioavailable is the way we absorb things and how much we get out of that.
Gotcha.
When we talk about bioavailability, grains have much lower bioavailability than animal products. So again, at the top of our list is whole fish, milk, eggs, then we've got meats, and then at the bottom of the list, I believe it's more in like the 50s compared to the egg that's 100 are our grains.
Which makes perfect sense, right? Because we're talking mostly primarily about like herbivores and like low-end omnivores, and so they're eating all the stuff we're not really set up to process and kind of, you know, processing it for us.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, and then kind of putting all the density of nutrients together for us so we can consume them and have it in a more bioavailable way.
So when we talk about bioavailability, legumes have a lower bioavailability than grains. And so where this DCM comes from in regard to grains is, from what I understand, is the amino acids. So dogs have 10 essential amino acids. Amino acid is what a protein is broken down into. Okay. Dogs have 10 essential ones, and then there are other non-essential. Essential means you cannot get those from other things. So you have to eat specific things in order to get those amino acids that you need. They're essential. You have to have them.
Gotcha.
Or shit goes wrong.
Sure.
Legumes, apparently, from my understanding, do not have the amino acids that we can sometimes get from grains. So every type of food has its own amino acids, and how we process those depends on a bioavailability. So in an ideal world, we eat meat such as beef, which is high in taurine, which is absolutely essential for heart health.
Sure.
But when we're not getting all of our nutrients, and I say we, but when dogs are not getting all their nutrients from meat proteins, a lot of these kibbles that are 30% protein are high in protein because of grains and legumes.
Gotcha.
That 30% protein does not mean it's coming from meat sources.
So these are plant-based proteins. So now this is the smoke and mirrors, right? When the grain-free thing became cool, my immediate assumption was, well, that must have more meat.
Exactly. But that is not the case. A lot of times, these grain-free foods are even higher in fillers, meaning foods that we're not getting a lot of nutrients from.
Gotcha.
And this is where things get bad, because you've got all of these peas and different ingredients that aren't very nutrient dense for dogs, but they make the label look the way it should. By saying, yeah, you can get protein from peas. And if you put enough peas in there, you can get 30% protein.
Yeah. And if you like cook them down and stuff them into a, you can make a lot of weight out of peas. And
yep.
And all of a sudden now you're getting this like high protein food that's got 0% bioavailability of specific
correct amino acids. Yes, exactly. So this is where things get sketchy. Dogs do not need grains. I have never fed Blitz a grain in her life. And she is just fine. But that being said, you can't just bank on a dog food having grains and saying, yes, this is a good one, or dog food not having grains and saying, no, this isn't a good one. You have to look at all of these things as a whole.
Gotcha.
The best way to do that for me, this is a huge emphasis in the kibble I'm going to choose, is the percent protein from meat.
Gotcha.
Meaning there is an exact number that companies can tell you of how much comes from meat. So Victor, right on their website, everyone can go look this up. Victor Hypro Plus is 88% protein from meat, 2% protein from plants and vegetables, and 10% protein from grains. That is one of the number one reasons why I feed Victor, is because I know that the majority of that 30% protein that they've got on the bag is coming from meat. Nature's Logic, which is my other top favorite kibble, their beef recipe is 87% protein from meat, and pork is 90% protein from meat. And you can tell by the ingredients that, you know, there's a lot of meat ingredients in these kibbles, but it like is, you know, a really good reassurance. If you are feeding a kibble, you should absolutely reach out. I've not seen it listed on any company's website beside Victor. You should absolutely reach out and ask what the percent protein is for meat in your specific recipe. Purina, when I emailed them, did not disclose that because they said it was proprietary information.
Okay.
Which is absolutely bogus to me, because it's a percent. How is that some secret?
Yeah.
Right? So that to me is immediate red flag, which doesn't surprise me coming from a Nestle company. But that to me is an immediate red flag that you're, you know, looking at the Pro Plan Sport ingredients: chicken, corn gluten meal, rice, beef fat, poultry byproduct meal, whole grain corn, corn germ meal.
Yeah, we got like three different corns in there.
How much of that protein is coming from corn, and how much is coming from chicken.
Yeah.
And not chicken meal, but chicken.
Sure. No, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, I think I feel honestly, this has been a very enlightening conversation for me. I've actually sat down and talked to you like this before, but I've never done it in such a structured way that my brain actually could process the information you were giving me. And I think I've now, my suspicions based about what I've been noticing in my dog's poop are starting to come to light to some degree as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating. And, so go on, but I do want to kind of run down the list. I want to think about specific brands when we're done with this
and
discuss some of that because there's important information here.
Okay. So to wrap all of that up, when I look for a kibble, what is the checklist that I go through? For one, I'm going to look for protein or percent protein, fat, and carbs. There are some people out there that are scared of too much protein. I personally am not. For one, I like high protein, high fat because that means my carbs are going to be low. On a dry matter basis, which is not what's listed on the bag of kibble, that's a as-fed basis, but on a dry matter basis, Blitz eats 48% protein, 36% fat, 11% carbs. High protein doesn't scare me when it's quality.
You couldn't find, I've never seen, I mean, I've looked at the highest of the high protein fat ratios on bags, and I've never seen a 46, 30, what was it?
48, 36.
So you'll never find a kibble that's that high in fat and protein.
No. And obviously there are dogs out there with health issues that can't have high protein.
Sure, sure.
So keep that in mind. But if you have a normal, average, healthy dog, I would not be concerned about feeding them too much protein or fat in a kibble because you already know it's going to be high starch.
Yes.
So then after I look at that and I say, okay, if my carb content is 70%, you couldn't pay me to feed that. So once I look at my protein, fat, and carbs, I'm going to look at my ingredients. So again, I'm mainly looking for quality meats. I want to see that it's going to be a high percent protein from meat by looking for a lot of meat ingredients. I'm going to look for biological availability. So I don't want to see a ton of grains. I don't want to see a ton of carbohydrates. I don't want to see cheap products. Corn, rice are cheap products. You're going to find a lot of that in a lot of foods, but those are going to be the very high glycemic index foods. They're going to be high carbohydrate. They're going to be not providing quality nutrients that are going to contribute to anything but bumping up the calorie value, bumping up the protein value.
Do you, and I may be heading you off here. We're talking corn, rice, we're talking grains for a second. We know we don't want to see a whole bunch of those, but I'd like to get back to the comparison of the legumes and the grains because at least the grains are providing some sort of bioavailability where the legumes aren't, right?
That's what we're assuming, yes.
Okay, that's an assumption, but that's it. It's like, are you more afraid to see, or do you, I guess, what, if you see peas on the list?
I know, yeah.
How does that affect you and your thoughts?
So seeing peas on the list, for one, where on the list is it?
Sure.
If it's going to be the second ingredient behind chicken, that's an automatic no for
me.
Gotcha. But if it's the 10th ingredient down,
okay,
it's not super concerning to me.
It's just a filler.
Exactly. Yes. And if they're getting enough, and this is just for me personally, if they're getting enough protein, percent protein from meat and there's peas on there, that doesn't concern me so much.
Okay. Now that said, I mean, I assume you would still want, I guess, do we want to see a grain if we see a pea? Does it matter?
I love that question. Do we want to see a grain if we see a pea? You're going to have quality grains in a kibble because you've got it. That starch has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
So I would rather see it from a quality grain like millet, which has a higher nutrient value than corn.
Gotcha.
I see corn and I'm not feeding it. That's just the way I am. I'm not feeding corn. I just know there's no. Okay. We need to mention this too. Whole corn in food is ridiculous because we know how humans do with whole corn, right?
Sure, yeah,
we see it come out the other end. So,
good point.
It is the same with dogs. Dogs cannot digest corn well.
Yeah.
And so in order to digest corn well, you have to make it corn meal.
Sure.
And look at the change in glycemic index. We go from out of 100, we go from 52 to 68. That's a big jump.
Because you're removing the fiber help of like getting it through
and the moisture content and everything else. So corn is a no for me.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. I don't know, man. The pea, because I started seeing, you know, the buzz around the peas and the DCM, and that's where everybody was freaking out. But that comes down to the amino acid content breakdown. But if you're feeding high quality meat proteins, none of that really matters.
Exactly.
Or in fats. Okay. Yep. Gotcha. Okay. I got that figured out.
And if it's something you're concerned with, like let's just say the brand Next Level has peas in it.
Yep.
If it were something where that's where I felt the most comfortable feeding that food,
yeah,
I would supplement beef heart, and it would take about an ounce a day. And you should definitely double check with a reputable nutritionist about this. And I would happily give anyone the resources to do this. My thought process is I would supplement raw beef heart a little bit a day. You can't do too much or dogs get diarrhea and you don't actually need much, but that has a great source of taurine in it. And I would talk to a nutritionist to see if that would be something that would kind of help you feel better about the peas.
Okay. Yeah. You just way over my
head. We'll save that for the next podcast.
But I'm with you. Like, I get it.
So looking for in kibble, ingredients, we just covered all of that. Quality amino acids. We just covered a lot about that. Keep in mind, and this is straight from the Purina website, heat and processing damages proteins.
True.
So the more heat and processing you add to a food, the less bioavailable those proteins are going to be.
Gotcha.
So when we talk about, you know, meals, does that really affect the quality of protein that are going to be able to be absorbed and really count for anything? Maybe. I don't know. That's, you know, just speculation, but something to keep in mind. Heat and processing will always damage proteins. I also am very aware of the calcium to phosphorus content, especially because we feed a lot of younger dogs. If that ratio is not correct, or if we simply have too much calcium, that can affect growth. So the calcium phosphorus ratio for large breed puppies, this isn't as applicable for smaller dogs, but for me, to be on the safe side, I want all my food to be in this, is 1.1 to 1 and 1.4 to 1, and calcium should be around 3 grams per 1,000 kilograms. So that is something I look for. If you are not feeding a large breed puppy, that isn't nearly as applicable to you. Copper content is important to me because I have a lab, and labs are predisposed or susceptible to copper toxicosis, which is copper storage disease. Copper storage disease is when dogs store copper in their liver and they're not excreting enough of it. And then essentially, you know, if we build up too much, it gets toxic. So copper toxicosis is a relatively recent thing that's happening. And from my understanding, what's happening is, for one, we do not have an upper limit of copper that's allowed in dog foods. We have a lower limit, but no upper limit. So companies can put as much copper in dog food as they want, and there are no reasons not to.
Are there any reasons for them to, or this is just something that's they don't even recognize it as being an issue?
That's a great question. And, you know, I can't speak on behalf of the company, but something that is apparently happening is that they recently switched, you know, a lot of nutrients in kibble are synthetic. They recently switched, and I say recently, I don't know, maybe this was in the past 5 to 10 years, switched the type of synthetic copper that they're using. And this new synthetic copper is supposedly, from what my understanding, more bioavailable, meaning dogs are absorbing more of it, and companies didn't change the recipe.
Gotcha. So they're collecting more of it in their liver,
yep,
because it's more bioavailable, but they were thinking they were doing the right thing. Now they end up with this weird side effect.
Yep.
Gotcha.
So for me, Ember has, this is weird, you can test for copper storage disease, but it's not black and white.
Is that a genetic test? I'm assuming
it is a genetic test through Paul Prince. Just because they have a copy or two of the disease doesn't mean they'll get it. And just because they have a copy or two of they don't have a copy or two of the disease doesn't mean they won't get it.
Gotcha.
So at the end of the day, it's still very gray, but Ember does have one copy of the gene. So I am very aware of what I'm feeding as far as copper goes. The desired range is 7 to 15 milligrams per kilograms. Most dog foods are in the 15 to 17 range, okay, which I don't think is terrible. Nothing to be concerned about. I will say Inukshuk is 30, which to me is alarming. And their statement on that is that you feed less of it, so they're not absorbing as much. Or, you know, they're not, it's not as much if you're feeding less of it, which might be true. I don't know if you're feeding half. I don't know. I don't feel the Inukshuk, but they are aware of it and supposedly are going to be changing it.
That's interesting. Cause yeah, that was one brand I certainly wanted to bring up for sure.
So after I've gone through all of those things, I also want to make sure it's a reputable company. Again, Nestle is not a reputable company. I will never feed any Nestle Purina product as long as I live. But when I look at that, I also think of Victor doing ethical recalls, not waiting for the FDA to step in. Obviously, things get missed and sometimes that happens, but to me, not concerning is what I was going to talk about there. And then finally, what I look for in a kibble is how dogs do on it. So obviously, we can look at their coat. If their coat's poor quality, that's a good indication that, you know, maybe they're not getting enough fat. Or, you know, maybe they're not, it's not agreeing with them. Teeth is also important to me. I have heard a lot of people complain about Inukshuk giving dogs teeth problems. That's something I'd be aware of. If you are feeding Inukshuk, keep an eye on that. Stool is big deal for both of us.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a make or break. If dogs eat kibble at my house and it leaves skid marks in my yard, meaning when I go to pick it up, there's poop residue all over my ground, that's a no for me.
Yeah. My yard is basically a poop slick right now.
Right. And that is so, and it's not even about, it's somewhat about convenience for me,
sure,
but it's also, that is a great way to transmit diseases. And there are so many dogs in my yard. If I've got poop that's leaving poop residue and dogs are then stepping in it and tracking it, not only in my house, which would give me nightmares, but, you know, licking it off their paws and then getting sick, it's a disaster. Yeah. I want a nice, solid, hard turd.
Yeah.
And if your dog isn't having that, that can be a red flag.
Sure.
So, you know, the number of clients that tell me, oh, their dog regularly has diarrhea or their poop's normally soft or patties or whatever, just because it's normal for them does not mean it's normal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if your dog isn't having turds that you can pick up and it not smear on the ground at all, you might want to look into changing foods or at least, you know, experiment with it.
For sure.
I've had quite a few dogs that were told that I was told they had upset stomachs on other foods and I feed them Victor and suddenly they don't anymore. You know, food is a big deal.
Yeah, for sure.
And then finally, long-term blood work. So this is something that I think is often overlooked, but just because you feed a dog a certain food for 2 years and they haven't had any major health crises doesn't mean there aren't things going on inside.
Yeah.
And, you know, DCM is a great example of that. And also, you know, if the Inukshuk copper tends to be a problem, we're not going to know for years. And so, you know, everyone that's feeding Inukshuk, if you have a lab, I cannot tell you how much I would recommend getting their blood work checked and look at those liver enzymes and making sure their liver values are all normal. Because, I mean, copper toxicity, it's toxic. They die from it quickly. It's not something that, you know, is easy to save them from. Once you see symptoms, they are dying.
Yeah, sorry, because it's already there.
It's
You're not getting
there,
rid of
right.
it at that point. That's like your heavy metal poisoning.
Exactly. Like, so... So just because you know your dog looks good on Inukshuk right now, and this is absolutely not throwing shade at Inukshuk, just using an example, it doesn't mean that that copper is not going to come back in a couple years and sure. affect them. And this goes for literally every dog food. Keep an eye on their blood work and keep in mind that, you know, blood work doesn't test for all things. So if your dog has a vitamin D deficiency or vitamin E toxicity, you're not going to see that on blood work. Blood work does not normal. Your normal yearly yeah. blood work doesn't show vitamin D.
Yeah. And my dog's not going to the vet for this kind of, you know what I mean? So this is, I have to kind of, you know,
be realistic. Yeah.
This is why I make friends with people like you, because I can watch the experiences you're having and then I can make adjustments in my own behavior based on that. And I think most of us out there are probably like me. There's going to be, you're going to get, you know, I think probably most of the people that are raw curious in the world are already following
Did
you to
some raw curious. Anyone who's raw curious, we need a group.
You know, but I'm not raw curious anymore. But I, you know, before we, number one, thank you. Like that is, I know that's accumulation of years of geeking out by yourself in your computer screen. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, that information and its curation didn't just come out of thin air, you know, and it's hard to find this stuff. I've looked and the people that write it up, you know, either I can't understand what they're saying or I just don't like the quality of the writing or whatever. So hopefully this guy's made sense to you the way it did to me. I feel better about my own choices at this point. You know, my personal experience, you know, so right now this is what I've gone through. I fed what I thought. Basically when I was getting started caring about this stuff, all I cared about was the protein fat content. And that's what I looked at. That's what I saw. Mm-hmm. I had people tell me like, hey, you need to read the ingredients list, like the first three ingredients. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. Have you seen that?
Often said the first three.
You know, so the first three ingredients, as long as they're an animal product, you're good to go. I'm sure there's some truth to that to some degree, but also knowing that, hey, some of these companies that may have that can be pulling a little bit of hanky-panky with the way they're writing it up. So being aware of that.
Yep.
My personal experience, I've never personally fed ProPlan. I've got a lot of friends that do. I know a lot of great dogs that eat ProPlan.
Yep, absolutely.
Right? And they're doing fine. And so again, this is, use the term throwing shade. None of this is to throw shade.
Absolutely not.
I worked at a major vending kennel that fed Science Diet based on the recommendation of our veterinarian there and we were feeding pallets and pallets and pallets and pallets of Science Diet. What
wow.
I can tell you
that is
it was the grossest kennel I've ever seen in my life.
I 100% believe it.
It was, I never saw a well-formed turd the entire time I worked there.
Because most of it is carbs. A lot of the prescription diets don't even have meat proteins.
So weird. Like what a weird thing to think that you're the
cornstarch.
Like, yeah. When it's backed by science that you're not going to feed a carnivore meat. Like how weird is that, right? And so when you see that, be suspect, do your own research, whatever.
Absolutely.
Again, this is not slandering anybody, we're just telling it like it is here. So that's one you'll never see me go near. I fed things like Pride, you know, 2616, because I was like, that's pretty good content. I fed Diamond for a long time. I went back to Diamond Naturals, and I have used, and tell me what you think of this. I've used Dog Food Advisor in the past as a website. I don't really understand what they're trying to tell me most of the time.
Dog Food Advisor gets so much flack, and I honestly, it is not a peer-reviewed source. I understand
sure.
that.
Yeah.
But they have...
Science Diet has got peer-reviewed research
exactly.
behind it.
Exactly. And that's why... So I don't go to Dog Food Advisor so much for looking at like types of kibble,
yeah.
But what I like is there's so much information there
they
that is
the contents down.
Yes, yes, and the majority of the stuff you find on Dog Food Advisor that is sourced, meaning you can look up the reference from it
yeah.
and see the source. But they do have a lot of solid information there about things like glycemic index and those kinds of things.
And it's, and so, you know, back to the personal experiences, I remember when Victor became a thing. I remember when it was coming up. I was training in protection sports and it got to be the food everybody wanted to feed, and they blew that brand up. And I didn't feed it for years after I recognized that happening. When I did start feeding Victor, I reached out to the company one time, never got a response. It was like on an Instagram DM, and it was like, hey guys, I feed a lot of dogs your stuff and I recommend it because I really like it. If you don't ever throw me any cool swag or something like that, I'm here. Pay attention to me, please. They never did respond to me. And I'm glad they didn't, honestly, because it gives me the opportunity to give objective, you know,
yes.
information at this point in my life.
But if they want to sponsor us now, we would definitely
I think every kid getting into dog training is like, I'm going to get a dog food sponsor, you know, and it's a double-edged sword. And if Victor called me tomorrow and said, we want you to have free pallets of dog food, I would feel really conflicted about it. Number one, because it would stick me to him. And now if they take a left turn,
yeah,
I got to break away.
Yeah.
You know,
I understand that.
And then number two, and I've said this on the podcast before, Hal at Midway General gets all my dog food business, and I want him to for the rest of his life, or for the rest of the time he operates that business. And the older I get, the more I recognize how hard it is to be an independent business person.
Absolutely.
The more I want to support those people in my local community, and I really would hope you guys are doing the same. So, Tractor Supply is very convenient. Hal is my guy.
And Hal is cheaper.
And Hal is cheaper. And
carries the big bags of Victor, which I love.
He'll ask. And I even went to him and I was like, hey, there's this new company made by the old guys that started Victor. It's Next Level. I happened to be there when the supply guy was there. And he was like, we don't carry it. We're not sure. You know, we're like, we're just happy doing what we're doing right now. And so I was like, I'll just wait on Victor. So I got my Diamond Naturals beef and rice, and I've been cleaning that up for 2 weeks now, and I'm so desperate to get back to my Victor because I'm addicted to kicking turds out of kennels. So just know that, and I'm not just here pimping their product. It has been the best thing ever for me in terms of what keeps my dogs right. I will say, and I have. You know, you got to come up in the wintertime if you're kenneling dogs outside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still a tough one. And it's always hard to find exactly what it is that's going to keep weight on certain dogs.
Right.
I got dogs right now that are getting fat in the kennel on a lower quality food. But their turds are terrible.
Yeah.
But I also have dogs that are skinning since the switch, have gone the other way. But of course, we've had these really cold nights.
We have, yeah.
You know, and so knowing what dogs you got to bring in, knowing what dogs you got to pay attention to when it gets cold, sometimes it's not just bringing the calorie content up. Speaking of which, a lot of folks on Inukshuk, tons of calories in a small amount of food. You know, right now it seems like copper is the one thing that sticks out as like, you know, and that's not the reason I didn't go to them. It's just because Hal won't carry them and I don't want to buy a pallet. I would try it again.
I'm not opposed to it. I think their normal general recipe is very mediocre.
Sure.
I look at it and I'm like, meh, looks like every other chicken product you've ever seen.
Sure.
They have a special process that adds fat.
Okay.
Which is on their website. That's how they get those super high fat contents, which in one aspect is really great because what does that mean? Lower carbs.
Yes.
Which I like. Something I don't like about it is that I feel like that fat affects their teeth.
Sure. That makes sense. And they're not getting whatever sort of nutrient.
Well, I mean, I feel like the process they add the fat to. Because, I mean, if you hold a Inukshuk, it's greasy. Squishy. It's greasy as squishy. Greasy can be. And I feel like that is what's affecting teeth.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So that's my one concern. Their marine recipe is higher quality, in my opinion, based on the ingredients. Their website is significantly lacking information.
I will say, though, I called him.
Mm-hmm.
Dude picked up the phone and was friendly as could be. Didn't take any time. He was knowledgeable. Yep. He wanted to talk. You know, I've never called Victor. I've never really had a need to. I probably should just to test the customer service. Mm-hmm. I know you had an experience, if you want to talk about it, with Next Level.
Yeah. So I reached out to Next Level asking them about questions that weren't listed on their website, like copper content, which I understand now is probably not a good time because I know that
they're
getting hammered.
Yeah.
But the response was embarrassing, in my opinion.
Sure.
It was very... I mean, one word answers, no punctuation, no hi, how are you, no thanks for reaching out, just one word answers. And to me, that was really inappropriate for a professional response. And, you know, here I am exploring their food and I want to be sold on it essentially because I am a Victor person.
Yeah.
And that did not sell me on it.
Yeah. So that's a bummer. And, you know, that's substance first. Always,
yep.
Right? For me, substance is number one. You got to have the right product. It's got to be the real deal.
Yep.
Number two, service, right? You got to take care of me, man, because I don't like bad customer service can turn me off real
for
quick.
Sure.
Love to give those people another opportunity one time because I think you're right. With the Victor recall,
yeah,
I think
don't
they're just
hold
getting,
that against them for indefinitely,
sure.
But I will be switching back to Victor. So it's not a big deal for me.
Exactly. And that's understandable. But it's, you know, so it's if you're out there, you lost your Victor, you're looking for alternatives. You know, I think that's a viable one.
Yep. So that's what I'm feeding right now.
Stools have been okay.
Next Level High Pro 30. It's very similar to High Pro Plus Victor. I will say the poop has been somewhat softer.
Okay.
Not leaving skid marks, no, not a big deal. A little bit more grainy.
Okay.
Nothing super alarming. It's still dark. We didn't talk about this, I do like dark poop because that a lot of times can reflect nutrient content. When I see a dog come in and it has really yellow or really light poop,
which is what I got everywhere around
that means what? Corn, grains, those kinds of things. If you feed a dog really high dense quality nutrients, so like liver and organ, which is obviously where the most nutrient dense muscle meat is, or tissue is what I meant to say, they will poop black.
Yeah.
And it might be diarrhea because that stuff is so high nutrient. But when you feed raw and you feed too much nutrient dense tissue,
it's black. Well, and one thing I always noticed about my friends that fed raw, other than you, because you do so good at keeping it all tidy, but like if you saw a turd somewhere, it looked like a coyote turd.
Yes, they absolutely do. You would never tell
them. Turns into dust and blows away. And one thing I will say is that Victor has that same quality
it
to
sure
a degree.
Does.
Not the same degree as a raw diet. But I mean, if I run across a turd from 2 weeks
it's
ago.
Dusty.
It's like, dusty. It's turning. Yep. It's like blowing away. It looks
and so is Nature's Logic. If you feed Nature's Logic, it is, you could almost not tell a difference.
Yeah, and so obviously there's a convenience factor to it, but it's telling you something else.
Absolutely.
You know, and I got turds in my yard right now from Diamond Naturals Beef and Rice that are 3 weeks old. don't judge me, but you can turn them up. They're still squishy.
Yeah.
Right. They're still, you know, and they will still stink if you step on them and track them into the house and the Victor won't. So, you know, we talk a lot about dog poop and crap and turds and all that stuff, but at the end of the day, that's an indication of something.
It sure is. So, if your dog is pooping 4 and 5 times a day, these massive poops,
yes,
that is an indication that what you're putting in them is coming right back out.
Yep. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of.
Yep.
You know, and it's not, and again, it's not to pick on anybody. Obviously, these are businesses we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and Victor did. They bought, you know, they were bought by a big conglomerate. Mm-hmm. I think the dudes that started it did something really right mm-hmm. when they made that kibble because it's, to me, it's awesome. I have not noticed. I do remember rumblings when that was going on of people like talking about the quality degrading mm-hmm. and stuff. I never noticed anything.
I didn't either.
Everything went fine.
Yep.
You know, and so for me personally, the substance is worth it. I've never had an issue that I needed to reach out. One thing I will say for Victor from a customer service standpoint, and it didn't come to me directly, but it came through Hal at Midway mm-hmm. General, was he was like, nah, they gave me a rebate immediately on everything that was sold in this deal. And so so I got 6 free bags of food, you know.
that we definitely did not
feed. No, I threw that to my next trip. So when I bought the diamond, they just threw 6 bags of diamond at me for free.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah. You know, not that I would have rather had the 6 free bags of Victor. Maybe I'll get them at some point. But, you know, they just took care of that across the board. So voluntary recall, offered refund to anybody that had throw out the food you got.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give your money back or redeem it for whatever else when you come back and buy it. I don't know how anybody else handled that, but that's why I love dealing with my guy.
Yep.
So like why I love dealing with Mike at Ugly Dog because not everybody in the world is going to have the access I have to Mike, but what I do know is like he cares that he's selling something good and that your service is good and Hal's the same way. And when you can look somebody in the eye, when you can shake their hand, it's a lot harder for them to bullshit you. So just keep that in mind moving forward, guys. Anything else, Emily, before we jump off?
If anyone would like to learn more, I would be happy to send them resources on, you know, how to learn more. If you're interested in maybe doing a raw, if anyone would be interested in listening to a raw podcast or even a supplementing kibble/raw podcast, let us know.
We'll do it. I'll do whatever.
Okay.
So
I think that's it.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a wonderful hunting season. If you're down south, guys up north, sorry, we're getting your birds now. I know you guys all, we were really jealous of you in weeks past. I hope you all get out and travel and find birds, have fun, love your dogs. And we'll look forward to chatting with you next time.
Hey, listeners, Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast. As fans of this show, you may be interested in the conversations on the Birdshot Podcast, where we discuss all things upland hunting, from upland birds and their habitat and conservation to the shotguns, bird dogs, and gear used to pursue them. Whether you're a seasoned upland hunter or just getting started and wanting to learn more, I interview a wide range of guests, each with their own unique perspective and valuable experience to share. If you're on the hunt for more upland hunting conversation, please consider subscribing to the Birdshot Podcast today. We'll